you and keep you. El Señor te bendiga y te guarda. May the Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. El Señor te mira con agrado y te extiende su amor. The Lord lift his countenance upon you and give you peace. El Señor te muestra su favor y te concede la paz. What a beautiful morning. You know, we have been going over 1 Peter 2 and verse 9, talking about some of the you are statements. We actually went to Matthew 5 first. We talked about when Jesus says you are salt. We had a lesson when Jesus said you are light. And then we've been picking apart 1 Peter 2, 9. We talked about being a chosen race. 2 weeks ago, we talked about being a royal priesthood. And this week, we're talking about being a holy nation. These are you are statements that are given to us by the Father. Now, who are we? That's a question that I want to pose to us, because I don't think it's a question that we pose to ourselves very often. And the only word I could think of for personality was ego. I think that's what the Bible uses when it talks about us. It talks about our ego, and not meaning our ego as in I'm better than you or I can do all things better than you can do them. I'm talking about who we are as a person. I am me. I'm standing up here. I have my own experiences. I am seeing you. And then you're sitting down there seeing me. You have your own personality, your own ego, your own soul, as it were. We have these different experiences, and we don't spend a lot of time thinking about who we are. We take ourselves for granted, I think. Who are we? Jesus tells us who we are. We each have a different personality, a different soul, but each one of us are made in God's image, and we're all different. But Jesus makes us all the same when he says, you are all salt, you are all light, you are all a chosen race, you are all a royal priesthood, you are all a holy nation. I couldn't get out of this particular thought process I had when I was putting it together without going to Psalm 139, starting in verse 13, reading through 16, where God says, "For you formed my inward parts." Listen to this. "You knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works. My soul knows it very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was being made in secret, intricately woven in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed substance. In your book were written every one of them, the days that were formed for me, when as yet there was none of them." Wow, what a statement from the Father. He knitted us intricately. What a word. When I think of intricately, I think of, and I know this sounds odd, but I think of those who knit lace. What intricate work that must be to make all of that, those lace strings come together and make those beautiful patterns. How intricate is that? And that's how we were formed. And anybody that knows even the least little bit about anatomy understands that. Our insides are intricately formed. And then we read from Jeremiah, chapter 1 and verse 5, where God says, and he's speaking specifically to Jeremiah, but there's some lessons here for us. "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. And before you were born, I consecrated you. I appointed you a prophet to the nations." This is actually a 4D picture. I guess it's a GIF because it's moving, of a baby in the womb. What an amazing picture. God formed us in the womb. He knew us before we were even known. He knew the number of our days. He knew what our purpose is supposed to be. He formed us with a purpose. You see, who we are matters to God. Absolutely, who we are matters to God. Because while we were yet still not on this earth, He knew us and He knew our purpose. He gave us a purpose. And He knitted each one of us together intricately in our mother's womb until here we stand on this terrestrial ball with a purpose given to us by the Father. You see, we are a chosen race. We are a royal priesthood. And we are a holy nation. And you see, I use some different understandings here. When I say He chose us, I go back to this idea of being a chosen race. We were chosen by the gospel. We responded to the gospel. We entered His kingdom. He chose us through the gospel. He's consecrated us, which is the idea from 2 weeks ago, as a royal priesthood. And He set us apart, which is actually the meaning of the word holy, set apart for a divine purpose. But before we get to holy, I want to talk about nation. Because when I think of the idea of nation or the understanding of nation, my mind goes to geographical boundaries. It just does. I think of the United States of America, and in my mind is the picture of the United States of America, from the Gulf of Mexico or from the country of Mexico to Canada, from the West Coast to the East Coast. My mind pictures Florida because that's where I was born. My mind pictures Alaska up off to the top because I spent some time there. I see Hawaii down on the... My mind just... I see the United States of America in picture form in geographical boundaries. And I do that with all the countries. When I think of any country in my mind, especially countries I've been to like Germany, Iceland, and Japan, I think of the geographical location on the globe. I think of the geographical boundaries of this country in the particular cities I may have been to. I may even think about neighboring countries, especially when I was in Germany, because I went to Belgium, I went to France, I went to all the neighboring countries, I went to Austria. And so I draw this picture in my mind. But do you know what that word nation means in the Greek? A body of persons united by kinship, culture, and common traditions. The Greek word is where we get the English word ethnic from. But even then, when I think of the word ethnic, in my mind, I'm back to geographical boundaries again. We think about ethnic foods as foods that are from certain areas of the world, right? And I put my favorite food up on the picture here, and I'm really glad I'm not very far from the part of the world that produces this kind of food. But again, we have to separate that. We have to get away from that idea. We place way too much emphasis on location, and we don't place enough emphasis on kinship, culture, and common traditions. We don't. The Israelites did the same thing, though, didn't they? They were chosen by God. They viewed themselves as God's chosen nation. And in a way, they were correct. They were chosen because of Abraham's righteousness. And I say chosen, that they were only chosen to bring forth the Messiah. That's why they were chosen. God chose Abraham because of his righteousness to start the lineage of Jesus Christ. I say that, and I spent a lot of time on Genesis 12, 1 through 3 a number of years ago, and I want to come back to that. I don't know that I'm going to spend a lot of time here, but here's the promise. Now the Lord said to Abram, "Go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to a land that I will show you." And just to give you an understanding of how far off the path and how much we go to geographical locations, when I read this verse, this is what came to my mind right here. I said, you know what? I need to put a picture of Abram's route from Ur to the promised land. I said, no, I did. You see, I did. But that's because my mind goes to geographical locations. And this is the route that Abram took. And he said, go to a land that I'm going to show you, and I'll make of you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. In verse 3, I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you I will curse, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Some of your translations may say all the nations of the earth shall be blessed. Same understanding. The word family there is an understanding of nations. And then, if we go to Galatians 3:16, we find the fulfillment of that verse in Jesus, who is the Messiah. Now, the promises were made to Abram and to his offspring. It does not say, and to offsprings, referring to many, but referring to one, and to your offspring, who is Christ. That is a direct reference to Genesis 12 and verse 3. And in you, in your offspring, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. All the nations of the earth shall be blessed through Jesus, who is the Messiah. But the nation that God mentions in 1 Peter is not a nation with geographical borders. It doesn't have it. We are a holy nation. Romans 2, verses 28, 29 says, for no one is a Jew who is merely one outwardly, nor is circumcision outward and physical. Paul is now, he's trying to bring the Jews into line with this thinking that everybody gets this gospel. Remember, the Jews thought they were chosen. They were the chosen race. They were the holy nation. They were the royal priesthood, and nobody else was. And so Paul is trying to combat this understanding. He says, no, a Jew is not one who is one outwardly. Nor is circumcision merely outward and physical. You remember in Genesis 15 where God cut a covenant with Abraham and gave him the sign of circumcision as a token, right? But a Jew is one inwardly, and circumcision is a matter of the heart, by the Spirit, not by the letter. His praise is not from man, but from God. This spiritual circumcision is what gets us into this nation. Those who have had their heart circumcised by Christ belong to this nation without borders, this holy nation. Colossians 2, 11 and 12 says, in him also, you who were circumcised, do we see the pattern I'm drawing here? And you who were circumcised with a circumcision made without hands by putting off the body of flesh by the circumcision of Christ. So here we're comparing circumcision yet again. Physical circumcision cuts off flesh. Spiritual circumcision cuts out sin. Having been buried with him in baptism, in which you were also raised with him through faith in the powerful working of God who raised him from the dead. This spiritual circumcision, this cutting away of dead flesh, this putting away of sin happens in our baptism. The Lord added them to his nation, the nation of Christianity, the church. And we read that in Acts 2:47. You can turn and read it if you'd like. The church is the holy nation to which Peter is referring to in 1 Peter 2:9, this nation without borders. And we are a holy nation. And that word holy is dedicated, consecrated, made or declared sacred to the service of God, set apart for a divine purpose. That's who we are. We are dedicated. We are set apart to be servants. We should have a singular purpose in the kingdom. And our singular purpose should be to honor and glorify God in all that we do and in all that we say. Which leads me into this idea of holy, set apart, dedicated. What does that look like? right? What does being holy look like? Do I have a bright light shining behind me? Is there a halo on my head? Are there angels and choruses singing, oh, when I walk into the room? Is that what holy means? Is that what holy looks like? Of course not. First of all, sometimes I think it's the horns that hold my halo up, but that's beside the point. Holy looks very different than the world. Our speech must be holy. Our speech must be dedicated to God. Our speech must be set apart for a divine purpose. Ephesians 4:29, let no corrupting talk come out of your mouths, but only such as is good for building up, as fits the occasion, that it may give grace to those who hear. That's an important phrase. Everything we say ought to be encouraging and uplifting to somebody. You know, one of the hardest things that I had to learn as a first sergeant in the United States Air Force is how to dress somebody down but encourage them at the same time. When somebody sits in my office and has disobeyed a direct order I've given them, how do I dress them down but yet encourage them to obey the next order I'm about to give them? It's hard. It's doable, and it takes effort, but it's hard. So often we take these things personally. If somebody disobeyed a direct order, and that's happened many times in my career in the Air Force, I would take it personally. They must not like me. They must not respect me. They must not think I'm much of anything. So I'm going to get up and I'm going to get in their face and I'm going to... No, don't take it personally, because I doubt it's meant that way. If somebody sins against you, if somebody says something to you that's hard to take and hard to hear, you still must respond with grace and mercy. I know somebody will say, well, what about Jesus? Jesus talked to the religious elite. He said, woe to you, you Pharisees and hypocrites, right? You make them twice the sons of hell. He said a lot of he said a lot of things to the religious leaders of the day. But those were the ones that were supposed to be leading people to him. Go and read what he says to the masses. Go and read about the compassion he has for them, because they're like sheep without a shepherd. Go and read about how he speaks to them. You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. Blessed are you who are poor in spirit. Read how he talks to the sheep, not the shepherds. And that's how we ought to be speaking to one another. Only such as is good for building up and fits the occasion, that it may give grace to those who hear. Colossians 4, speech, all gracious, seasoned with salt. Go back to, 6 or 8 weeks ago now. You are the salt of the earth. Remember, salt was not something that changed the flavor of the food, right? Salt is a preservative. Let your speech be seasoned with words that preserve. And the only words that preserve are the words we're given in our scriptures. So that you may know how you ought to answer each person. Ephesians 5:19. Speak to one another. Speaking to one another. How? How do we speak to one another? Psalms, hymns, spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord. We speak to one another using the words of the Father. Grace and mercy and kindness and love. That's what holy looks like in our speech. Set apart for a divine purpose. Dedicated, consecrated to the service of God. But not only is our speech consecrated, but so is our living. We live in a manner that's dedicated to the service of God. 2 Peter 3:10 through 12. But the day of the Lord will come like a thief, and the heavens will pass away with a roar, and the heavenly bodies will be burned up and dissolved, and the earth and the works that are done on it will be exposed. Since all these things are thus to be dissolved, since the entire world, the entire heavens, when Jesus comes back, all of that stuff's going to be gone, since they're all going to be dissolved, what sort of people ought you to be? In lies and godliness. Waiting for, here we go, waiting for and hastening the coming of the day of God, because of which the heavens will be set on fire and dissolved, and the heavenly bodies will melt as they burn. Don't get caught up in this apocalyptic imagery of the destruction of the earth and the heavens. I want us to be caught up right here, hastening for, waiting for the coming of the day of God, living lives of holiness and godliness. Man, I'm not hastening. How do we hasten the day of the coming of the Lord? It's His day, not mine. He's coming back when God sends Him back. I have no control over that. How do I hasten the day of the Lord? Oh, by speaking His word. When I come into contact with anybody, I ought to be telling them about the mighty works of God. I ought to be telling them about the Savior's blood that was shed for me, that forgives me of my sin. I ought to be telling them about the righteous Messiah who sacrificed His life for me, even though I was still an enemy of His, even though I was set against Him, even though I was a sinner, He died for me. That's how I ought to be living. 1 Peter 1:13 and 6 through 16. Preparing your minds for action. I love that phrase. Preparing your minds for action. Set your mind on the work that is to be done. And being sober-minded, set your hope fully on the grace that we brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. As obedient children, do not be conformed to the passions of your former ignorance, but as He who called you is holy, you also be holy. As He who called you is dedicated, you also be dedicated to the service of God. You also be set apart for a divine purpose, since it is written, "You shall be holy, for I am holy." In everything you do, in everything you do and say, you should ask yourself, is God pleased with this? Is the action that I'm about to perform dedicated to the service of God? And you're telling yourself, well, I'm just making PB&Js for the kids. Are you feeding your family? Is that not dedicated to the service of God who tells you to take care of your family? Absolutely. Is what you are doing pleasing to the Father? Is what you are saying dedicated to His service, set apart for a divine purpose? Because, brothers and sisters, you are a holy nation. You are set apart. You are the church. You are different than the rest of the world. We are a nation without borders. We are in fellowship with everybody else who is in fellowship with God. That's who we are. Everybody who have had their sins washed away, everybody who has called on the name of the Lord, everybody who's repented of their past life without Him, everybody who has confessed that Jesus is the Messiah, everybody who has had their heart circumcised in baptism is set apart for a divine purpose. You know, one of the things I remember fondly is no matter where I went in the world, even when I was deployed to Kuwait, even when I was deployed to Iraq, there was a body of Christ for me to go meet with. Everywhere, every geographical location that I went to, I was able to worship with a holy nation. Brothers, sisters, we are set apart. We are dedicated to the service of God. We are a holy nation. God may not have called you out of Ur. He may not have asked you to walk across the deserts of the Middle East to go to a land that where he'll show you. But he has called you. He has called you to his service. He has called you to be a servant in his kingdom. What are you doing with your life? What is your purpose? I'll tell you what God says your purpose is. And that is to live lives of service to him. If you've not yet been added to the kingdom, I would beseech you, now is the time. I would say, don't wait another second. Because we're not promised tomorrow. At any minute, God could call Jesus back, and this heaven and this earth will be dissolved and melt in fire. And if you're a part of the kingdom, you'll be called to him in the air. Be a part of the kingdom. Come sit down on this front pew. One of our elders will sit down with you. You can confess that Jesus is the Messiah. And your heart can be circumcised in baptism. Your sin will be cut away. And you'll rise to walk in newness of life. If you have a need, make it known while we stand and while we sing. Have thine affection.